From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capitol Notes podcast for February 26th. This is also the third time I've started it because I couldn't think of what the date on the calendar was. I'm going to let this one roll, Anthony.
Okay, let's let it roll.
You know, this is supposed to be just a free-flowing conversation. I got to stop trying to be precise.
That's right. What happens when you plan?
Why do you need to be precise? I mean, we're only talking about politics.
That's right.
The budget.
It's an imprecise science.
That's Anthony York from Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED. And we are back to our favorite topic this week.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think that's the same music you used last week. The budget.
It's our budget theme song.
Is it? We need a budget theme song. That actually, that should be something I should look for. Some kind of someone who to commission a piece of music called the California budget theme song.
I think like a John Cage, you know.
Well, I was going to say some kind of dirge. A John Cage thing would be good, but yeah. a dirge.
Dissonant and nonlinear.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking.
Discordant,
John Cage.
Dissonant.
Yes.
Anyway, we sound smart. Slightly.
I don't know what any of those words mean.
I'll get you a dictionary afterwards. All right, so let's talk about we had a little bit of budget action this week, and I emphasize the word little bit of budget action this week.
You didn't emphasize action?
No, I emphasize little. Because we had the end of the 45-day unbelievable, oh my God, Armageddon physical special session, which was the whole clock when the governor declared a fiscal emergency back in January.
And here we are. Now we are in the throes of Prop 58 lockdown. Do you feel it?
No, I think even the governor's office concedes that the legislature met the very vague constitutional requirement of submitting a solution to the budget problem.
Well, they weren't,
albeit a incomplete solution.
Well, the governor couldn't very well tee off on the legislature from the Rose Garden, but we'll get there.
Well, we'll get there. But let's talk. I mean, bottom line, we got progress, but not a lot of progress toward the $20 billion problem.
Right, and a lot of this is by design. I think that there's an agreement among Democrats, and I think even many in the Schwarzenegger administration say, look, we're not really facing a cash flow problem the way we were last year, where we were going to run out of money to pay our bills. What we have is a budget deficit for next year. We can pay our bills through June through a little bit of maneuvering that we saw this week, and that's what we saw was kind of the bare minimum. But the real question is what the deficit is going to be. And Democrats have sort of taken the line of rather than try to predict, since our budget projections have been so wrong, I mean, we were $1 billion off in our projections in January. We actually got $1.2 billion more than we thought we would, which was a little bit of welcome good news. And so rather than make these cuts now or call for these new revenues now when we don't know what the actual numbers are going to be, let's wait until after the money comes in April and wait till May, you know, when we can revise a budget and get a real sense of what the real number is before proposing some cuts.
And then we can fight and wait until we actually get it enacted in the fall.
Right. And now, and there are, of course...
Sorry, that's the cynicism of me of budgets
well,
for...
Yeah, I mean, there are some problems. Obviously, there are some problems there. And we'll see what happens next week. We get into the details of what did and didn't happen this week, and we might see one key piece of the overall budget solution coming back next week, and the main reason for that is because you don't need Republican votes for it. But maybe that's a segue into what did happen.
Well, what I mean, you know, we don't have to be so deep and thoughtful.
No, detail oriented.
We don't have to be so detail oriented. But suffice it to say that most of what was sent to the governor's desk this week involved minor changes in spending.
Right.
And it started out as a $5 billion package of bills. The $5 billion package didn't get all the way through the process by week's end.
Right.
At best, we were closer to the $2 billion range, you know, give or take a little bit, depending on...
And even then...
Yeah, depending on some of the final action that's going to play out here on Thursday. Shocker, as we're sitting here talking on Thursday. But mm-hmm. Hey, you know, we're taping the podcast.
Gotta go.
But we're in the ballpark of about $2 billion, which if you look at a $20 billion problem, we've roughly gotten around 10% of the problem resolved up to this point, theoretically resolved.
Right.
Even that, though, starts to kind of look a little questionable if you really step back and look at it. I mean,
right.
Let's take, for example, two things that are in that package. an $800 million savings from the federal prison health care receivers budget.
Right.
Now, we have had about, maybe I shouldn't say zero, but we've not had a lot of success in trimming back prison health care costs because, frankly, we as the state or the state leaders don't control that budget, really. The court pretty much controls
now,
that budget
the federal
right now.
Courts.
Yeah, out of the federal courts. So that is budgeted as an $800-some million savings, ballpark about $800
Health care costs
savings.
Are falling everywhere, John. Haven't you read?
Of course. That's what they're talking about in Washington
That's
this
right.
week. And then it also relies on a savings of 186, 187 million.
We're talking
the same thing here?
Yeah.
Undocumented? The commutation of sentences of undocumented felons who are behind bars, while the administration flat out admitted this week that the governor has no intent to commute the sentences of that many undocumented felons. And
right.
so the number is going to be closer to like
$20
million. $20 million. Yeah. So quickly you start to see, and then there was a back and forth about whether or not the legislature should have used that number. The administration
right.
said, we told you it's not going to be real. The legislature says, hey, too bad, you put it in the budget. Bicker.
But bottom line,
and you can go to that, but big picture here, bottom line, big picture, I can't decide which metaphor
bottom
I
picture.
Want to use. Bottom picture I want to use. This gets back to what I think you're talking about, revenues. Assumptions are just that. They are assumptions. And the question is, can you really rely on them in light of what we have gone through over the last couple of years of having to come back and continually refix every assumption that didn't prove to be true?
Right. I think politically some of the reason that you saw the administration make the point on the undocumented prisoners and yet end up pulling back a little bit is I think there's sort of a tacit admission that, look, the budget is going to have a lot of, shall we say, artificial solutions in it when it's finally passed. I mean, things that will be scored as savings that will not actually come to pass. And they will
which
carry over to deficits into the following year. That's just...
Which has been true of just about every budget, according to Bill Lockyer this week when he was talking to members
since,
of the Assembly.
Since he
was the leader of the state Senate right. 13 years ago.
But he gave all the credit to Pete Wilson. So,
which only endears him further to Democrats. But anyway.
Since 1998, though, the point being. But that at the end of the day here, the governor may end up signing a budget that has a larger scored savings on the undocumented prisoner release, commuted sentences. It may wind up being closer to that $180 million number. So the governor doesn't want to protest too loudly, I think, because he wants to give himself some wiggle room to sign something either now or this summer that that allows the state's books to appear balanced.
Yeah. And that's that kind of art of budgeting that we talk about.
You could call it art.
So often. A lot of things.
Some might call it lying. You could call it art.
You could. I think it's worth talking about that one of the biggest pieces of that $5 billion package that did not happen this week was the mind-numbingly complicated gas tax swap.
Nah, it's easy, man.
You think it's easy?
You just eliminate the sales tax on gasoline, not diesel, and you raise the sales tax on diesel a little bit. Then you raise the excise tax, and you use that to retire the general fund obligations for debt service on Prop 1B bonds. What's the problem, John?
You should get on the radio and say that more often.
And then 40% goes to the STIP and 40% goes to the – never mind.
The shop, the STIP.
That's right.
Yeah. So
Santa Maria. Right.
Nice. Yeah. Nina Pinto. Yeah. They're very nice.
Thanks.
You're using your grade school education.
Thanks.
We should talk about education, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
See? Another segue. Segue preview. But the gas tax swap thing is still – somewhat squishy. The Assembly approved the Democratic alternative to the governor's proposal. I mean, backing up for a moment, the governor pitched a version of this in January in his budget. Democrats pretty much said, we're not going to do it. The Democrats came up with an alternative of which the governor didn't seem terribly fond of and Republicans weren't fond of either.
Right.
But the Assembly passed it. The Senate said, we'll hold back and try to keep working on it. And because the Senate didn't pass it, we are technically still working on it because it hasn't gone through the whole process.
And they are. And I think that this is a negotiation that they think they can get done with Democrats in the administration where they won't need Republican votes. This will be a simple majority
package.
Which you
alluded to earlier.
Right. And I think that that we could see something happening next week. As of now, the major two issues we've seen in this gas tax proposal, we see the reprise of a concept that was first introduced back in – December 2008, when the Democrats passed a budget package that was eventually vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger.
The immaculate taxation revenue neutral concept.
Right, where if you lower one tax and then increase another tax by the same or lesser amount, that is somehow revenue neutral, and that tax increase does not need a two-thirds vote because it's lowering one and raising another by the same
amount.
Even
though you're raising revenues in one pot of state money, you're lowering them in another pot of state money, they say by looking at a macro sense of state spending, you have not actually altered the macro state spending, ergo it is not a two-thirds vote by the Constitution.
Right.
So now, that was never actually tested in court.
No, there was a lawsuit filed.
Well, I was going to say there were threats of actually doing it, but the lawsuit was thrown out because there actually wasn't a budget deal.
Because the governor vetoed it.
But yeah, I mean, so this has never been really actually tested to see if it has constitutional muster. It's widely believed. It's used in the building. Again, gets back to our thing of like, hey, you do the best you can because nobody can agree on the other stuff.
That's right. And, you pass the budget and then let them fight it out in court. And then, a new governor and I guess 17 new legislative leaders will have to deal with it.
But so you were going to talk about the areas of contention. And I know one of them is education funding.
Right. That's a big one. We can talk about that one first. The governor's proposal, because of the way the Proposition 98 formula is calculated, the spending formula that guarantees money for public schools.
Speaking of mind-numbing formulas,
yes. The governor, by eliminating the sales tax, the governor, like the Democrats, proposed eliminating the sales tax on gasoline and replacing it with a new excise tax. The sales tax money gets computed into the Prop 98 formula. The excise tax does not. And so by eliminating the sales tax, the governor's proposal would have lowered the Prop 98 guarantee somewhere. It's funny, Democrats say somewhere in the neighborhood of $800 million. Right? That's the number that's been thrown around a lot this week.
In the current year?
Right. I've heard the $2 billion. Is that $800 for the current year? You might know this better than me.
The original argument was that there was a broad reduction over the whole period by a couple of billion bucks.
By $2 billion. Well, that was the argument that Democrats were making initially when the governor released his budget in January.
Yeah. So, but anyway, you get the picture here, folks.
Right.
It would have, according to all of these critics, lowered the amount of money guaranteed for schools.
Right. So the version passed by the Assembly included what I think Assembly budget staff was calling a clarification on how to interpret the Constitution.
Yes.
which basically was at the behest of education groups, which basically, quote unquote, clarified that even though we're eliminating this gas tax money, it should still be computed into the Prop 98 guarantee.
And now let me step back and say, to try to explain to people what would have to happen if this was to go forward. And this is and was described to me by somebody else this weekend too as another example of how we seem to the old adage of like when you're in a hole, stop digging.
Yes.
But we continue to dig ourselves into a hole of mind-numbing formulas and charts and rules and if A, then X and not B. And so here's what would have to happen effectively. If that was to go into effect, from the way I have heard it talked about, we would have to keep a separate running tab over here in state government in years to come about school funding based on a sales tax that no longer exists. In other words, we would have eliminated this money from the way that the state collects
but you would
money.
Have to estimate.
But we would still have to continue to calculate a figure for school funding as though it still existed.
Can we get at like a good acronym like the fuel sales tax backfill accountable accountability education account?
Where are you going? Would that be
Ficino?
Oh, Ficino. Sorry, that was a different podcast. But I think that is one of those. That's one of those things that we talk about. When we talk about government reform and we talk about the way the public views what happens here at the state capitol. I mean, this is a great example of it. Rather than and I want to get to this point about education funding in a moment, but I want to preview the point by saying rather than just going ahead and making a tough decision, and admitting to people we're doing X or we're doing Y because we need to do it, we're doing something called Z+, which is like, well, we'll keep pretending this is so and so and we'll add another way that we have to pull out a calculator every year to figure out what we're doing.
And then, and not to mention, I mean, to get the real mind-numbing details, a lot of this is contingent upon which of the three different formulas within Prop 98 we're using, whether this is a test 1 year or a test 2 year. And I'd say that's another podcast, so, but that's another.
But I think the bottom line here for this gas tax swap is this is why this is taking so long to figure out, because this is complicated.
Right. And that's a big piece. And basically what it boils down to is the Democrats, at least at this stage, are going through the motions of standing up for education. We'll see what the final deal looks like.
I think there's some skepticism in the education community. You heard that by members of the Education Coalition at a press conference on Wednesday. They're skeptical. They're supporting the plan. They're supporting the work.
Democrats.
But they the work of the Democrats in the legislature. But they are skeptical that this is all going to work out. And I think they're reserving their right on several things to challenge it in court or in the court of public opinion come later 2010.
Great. But now we'll have the teachers' unions and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association joining together to challenge the budget.
It'll be fantastic.
So the education funding is one major piece. The other major piece is the suspension of the new rules on the net operating losses. Basically, there were, as part of last February, it was only a year ago. Hard to believe.
Jeez,
it was only a year
72
ago.
72 budgets ago.
But as part of the budget deal that was passed in February of last year, Republicans were able to gain some concessions on the way business losses are calculated, and would allow businesses to go back a couple of years to calculate what's known as their net operating loss.
And thus lower their tax liability.
Right. And so Democrats now want to suspend, as part of this revenue neutral situation, they want to suspend those new rules and keep the existing tax structure in place. The governor has said he's against that. He views that as a tax increase. And that's been a major sticking point in this gas tax. Again, the logic of all of this, right? How a gasoline tax affects public education and how businesses are taxed. It's welcome to California.
Yeah, right? It would not make sense if you were sitting around and with regular folks. But if you're sitting around here, it all makes sense. And you know, the tax credit thing has been this volatile issue out there for a while, because there are a lot of groups, core Democratic constituencies, who have argued that you can't give these big businesses, in a lot of cases, these tax credits when you are cutting so much money from vital, what they would argue would be vital state services.
Right.
And there might be a middle ground. I mean, you're probably hearing that too. I've heard a little bit. There might be a middle ground on some of this, that perhaps, like the net operating loss when you're talking about, is one that I think the governor's folks have signaled they really don't want to have suspended.
Right.
But maybe there might be some leeway on like the unitary suspension thing. And if you need to know what that is, please look up.
Call John Myers.
Call Anthony. Google that sucker.
Yeah.
But, you know, so maybe there is a middle ground in all that. But again, this is all of that sausage making of trying to come up. And I get back to my big point of trying to come up with a budget solution package that is still only a fraction of what the state's problem is. And,
right.
And that's why you laid out what you did at the beginning of the podcast, which is everybody is saying, let's wait. And I think there are two reasons for that. Let's wait because the revenue projections have been wrong in years past. But also let's wait because we don't have any consensus at all on what we're going to do.
Right. And you know, it's interesting also on this net operating loss issue, the political dimension of this too. You know, the California Teachers Association is, I believe they're currently on the streets with an initiative that would repeal those tax breaks that were passed last year. And so how does the future of their initiative impact these budget discussions? Does that become part of the discussion here, whether or not they go ahead with this? And if there is a budget that's passed that's not to their liking, you know, then are all bets off on the initiative front? That's another you know, dimension of this to watch.
Well, it's an important dimension because, I mean, I alluded to some of that about, you know, what the education community could do and CTA, I mean, obviously, because they're the big political dogs in that community with all the political money.
Yes.
But they've got multiple options. And I'm going to go back to what they were carping about, complaining about on Wednesday, which was the administration's interest. And, boy, you really talk about being careful to not get in the weeds of Prop 98 here. But
right.
The administration's interest in going back and revising or taking a second look at the promises made in the budget last July about the level of public school K through 12 and community college funding,
right,
which is the Prop 98 guarantee. And their assertion that the administration's interest, and I'm not going to get too deep in this, is illegal because everybody made a deal, and a deal is a deal, and you can't go back and fix it. And the administration's perspective is that, well, the revenue numbers weren't right. And, you know, we've gone back and looked at it, and we think the revenues are different. But remember,
this is the governor who, in January, in his State of the State address, said he was going to fully fund public education. I mean, talk about art, right? What does that mean, fully fund at what level? I mean—
And education is such an important thing, not just politically, but obviously it's about, you know,
learning and stuff.
But depending on the year, it's somewhere around 40% of the general fund.
Yes.
And there was an analysis of the governor's education plan that's out on Thursday from the Ledge Analyst Office. And I know, you know, we're not going to go into a whole thing. I mean, they think that it's, you know, that's got some assumptions that, you know, may or may not come true. And if they don't come true, boy, there's going to be a lot of trouble about figuring out how to pay for education under the mandate. But this gets back to the politics versus policy, because I spoke to the lead analyst for the LAO's office on education, and we were talking about it, and the report says this, that there are two sensible policy choices and one that's not a great policy choice. That may be the political choice, and this is my interpretation, not the LAO's interpretation.
No, they don't get into that.
That's just for people like you and me. Option one would be suspend Prop 98. Suspend Prop 98, and everybody agree.
Hold on, where's the thunderbolt?
I know exactly. and you can suspend Prop 98 with a 2/3 vote of the legislature and the governor, and we've done it only
once, one and a half. Right.
Once when the governor came into office, and that kind of weirdo halftime after the Loma Prieta earthquake. Anyway, suspend Prop 98 and have everybody just agree how much money we really have, how much we can actually give education. You know, actually just have like one of those moments. This is like, you know, the overused political term of sitting at your kitchen table and looking at your bills.
Right.
But everybody just agree, hey, here's how much money we have. That would be option one.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. And option two would be raise revenues. Raise enough revenue so that you funnel
enough. Hold on. Where's the thunderbolt?
raise enough revenue to where you fund Prop 98 at the level that everybody says or people say that it should be funded at.
Good luck with that.
Exactly. And which leads us to option three, fight over the formulas, fight over the legal language, put something out there that looks like it works, that everybody's politically placated, that we all live to fight another day. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not so naive as to think that, you know, that option three is something that never should come out. But this gets back again, I think, to the public's perception of what happens. And we talk about that so much this year. It's an election year. Reform measures aren't necessarily flowering out there in the world, but people are still talking about reform. This is another example of, you know, why is there not a tough choice? Where is someone in government, in politics, to say, you know, these aren't great choices and nobody's going to like them, but we got to do something real and not something smoke and mirrors.
Cue Meg Whitman on her white horse, Jerry Brown on his
Jerry
white
Brown
horse.
On his white horse.
Or the guy from the Old Spice commercial on his white horse. Have you seen those?
I have seen that commercial.
Yeah, pretty good.
Anyway, so we got a long ways to go in the budget.
I'm on a horse.
Yeah. We got a long ways to go in the budget debate. We want to talk quickly about the governor being in D.C. this week.
Okay.
Because we said we were going to, right?
Does that mean that we need to talk like this really quickly?
Not really quickly.
Okay.
So Governor Schwarzenegger was in Washington at the beginning of the week. He had a private sit-down with the Prez.
Yeah. Stephanopoulos first, and then the Prez. Was it Stephanopoulos?
No. Stephanopoulos doesn't host ABC.
Oh, that's right.
It was Terry Moran. They have a rotating host of that show now. He was on the Sunday talk show on ABC. Then he was at the National Governors Association. He had a one-on-one, I guess, or who knows who else was in the room, but a chit-chat with the big guy in the Oval Office, and came back, not necessarily connected to that, but also trying to promote that he got some good news, that California got some good news, that we got, I can't quite remember the exact number, it's more than $600 million, maybe around $650 million.
In that ballpark, on the Medi-Cal.
Yeah, for our Medi-Cal program, you know, so that takes a little bit of budgetary pressure off the state course, the governor wants a heck of a lot more from the feds to balance his budget.
It's not quite $8 billion, but yeah, it's,
or $7 billion, right, exactly. It's not close to that, but, you know, they like to say it's a start, and that's true. It's a start.
Baby steps.
It didn't get any firm commitments that we hear from the president. And then, yeah, it was on This Week, and I don't think made a lot of news on that talk show, but I was struck by one thing he said, which was that, again, said we don't need a second stimulus.
Right.
And that, I think, is a very interesting debate in economic circles and budget circles, again, about so many of the things that we're cutting and so many of the problems are based on how bad the economy is and what is the best way to get us through the rough patch, you know, another round of temporary funding to patch over or something else.
I don't know. Sinking. Swimming?
Sinking or swimming.
Yes.
Yeah, did you find any other news that he made out of Washington?
I think the tone that he struck, you know, was interesting. Given his tone from his last trip to D.C., where he was essentially pounding on the door of Congress, demanding the piggy bank, mm-hmm. right? And this time he was berating Republicans for not going along with the president, and talking about the need for health care reform again. January, you know, blasting the Obama health care plan. For shortchanging California, and then he's there as the president sort of unveils healthcare 2.0, suggesting that hey, maybe this is a good deal and it's time to pass national healthcare reform. So, I'm sure the governor's office can tell you that why that's a consistent message, but the difference in tone in just a couple of weeks was striking to me.
Yeah, and again, you know, he certainly stands out as one of the only Republicans, especially a Republican with national pull, saying anything that's like, yes, let's work with Obama administration.
Well, he and Scott Brown, apparently, who cast his vote for the jobs bill, another podcast.
Would it be surprising then that the preliminary rundown or the rundown of the California Republican Party convention next month does not list the governor as a speaker then?
I don't think he's been there for a while, right?
Well, I think he's been, but he hasn't had one of those big prominent speaking things. But, gee, are we surprised then that the party faithful aren't lining up to hear him talk?
They're all going to be watching the Whitman-Poisoner debate.
No. There's not one.
No.
You'll be getting a phone call now.
I know. I'm sure. Hi, Sarah.
yes. Phone is ringing as we speak.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have more budget news maybe next week. Who knows? Maybe some of this gas tax stuff will get sorted out and we can come back and bore you to tears with how the gas tax swap will work. Boy, look at the excitement. Wow. And all other kinds of capital shenanigans. So I guess that's it.
Okay, then.
From Anthony York at Capital Weekly. Oh, sorry. And the blogger king of the LA Times.
Blogger king. Is that like, never mind.
I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.